Good morning. You are listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. We heard the most important weather forecast just now on the NPR News, which is what's happening in New York City for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow. But let's hear from Cedric Haynes about what we can expect here in Park City and the Wasatch Back.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Wednesday. Look for mostly sunny to partly sunny skies as we go throughout the day. Park City will see high temperatures climbing into the mid-40s this afternoon. We'll look at high temperatures in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. As we move into your forecast for your Thanksgiving Day, temperatures start off below freezing in the mid to upper 20s in the Wasatch Back, but we'll see those temperatures warming up quite nicely. We're looking at highs in the low 50s for us in Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures for your Thanksgiving Day climbing into the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Black Friday, starting off with those temperatures once again in the upper 20s to right around 30 degrees. So if you are still in the ancient times of going out to some of those early morning sales, make sure that you are bundled up with temperatures around freezing. But we do warm up into the upper 40s again for Park City by the afternoon hours on your Friday. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. Once we get towards the upcoming weekend, we told you we've been watching a storm system that would bring us some colder air. And sure enough, it's still going to get colder with those temperatures dipping down into the low to mid-20s for your Saturday morning across the Wasatch Back. High temperatures on Saturday only in the mid to upper 30s in Park City, with highs only in the low 40s for us in the Heber Valley. Along with that, we will see a few more clouds on the increase, and there is a slight chance of a couple of isolated rain or snow showers developing in the mountains as we get towards your Saturday afternoon. We'll see a little better chance, I think, of a few scattered snow showers in the forecast here as we go into your Sunday. Temperatures will definitely be cold enough for it, as morning low temperatures dip down into the teens as we head into your Sunday morning. And we're looking at high temperatures struggling to get to near freezing in Park City for your Sunday afternoon, and highs only around 40 in the Heber Valley at best. Now, that moisture that's going to be moving through, the storm system looks to split now, so it doesn't look to be as strong, meaning widespread snow chances, but I do think we will see some snow showers throughout your Sunday. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, we're going to be speaking with Steve Richardson and Rob Paul of the Christian Center about how they are helping families this Thanksgiving. Then we're going to get to talk some trash. Ashley Cawley of Republic Services will be on, and we're going to finish our hour by speaking with Jeremiah LaFranca of the American Red Cross on Safe Holidays Cooking. We'll be right back after this.
The Wasatch County Health Department confirmed Saturday 5 local high school students have measles. Tuesday morning, it said 3 more students have joined the list. The 3 new cases are in unvaccinated students. With 8 measles cases at Wasatch High, County Health Director Jonelle Fitzgerald says students without the full 2 doses of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine should stay home for 3 weeks.
Our recommendation is that unvaccinated students at Wasatch High School don't go to school from the last known exposure date, which at this time is November 18th.
For vaccinated students, the risk is low. The recommended 2 doses are 97% effective at preventing the virus. Wasatch County Health Department Medical Director Eric Christensen says the vaccine is safe and it provides protection even if it's administered shortly after a measles exposure.
We do recommend people, if you've had exposure to someone with measles, to get the MMR vaccine. If you get that within 72 hours, that can provide prevention of you either getting the infection or reducing the symptoms of the infection.
Individuals with health insurance can get the MMR vaccine for free. The health department also offers free or reduced price vaccines for those who are uninsured, depending on their income. Of Utah's 13 health districts, Wasatch County students have the second highest rate of vaccine exemptions in the state. For the 2024-25 school year, state data shows 14.6% of the county's seventh graders had an exemption. The Wasatch County Health District also has the largest share of seventh graders in the state without 2 doses of the MMR vaccine, 13% for the 2024-25 school year. The latest information about measles cases in Utah is available on a state dashboard. You can find a link at kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Park City School District is urging families to check their children's immunization records and ensure they are up to date on all vaccines amid the measles outbreak in Wasatch County. To help prevent the highly contagious virus from spreading, The Summit County Health Department has set up last-minute vaccine clinic on Wednesday for local, that's today, for locals to get immunized against measles, mumps, and rubella. The clinic announcement late Tuesday comes after neighboring Wasatch County Health Department reported 8 measles cases in local high school students. No cases had been confirmed in Summit County as of yesterday, and health officials say vaccination is the best way to avoid the virus or lessen symptoms. MMR vaccines are 97% effective against measles after 2 doses and are even 93% effective after 1 dose. Summit County residents can stop by the health department's Park City location at 650 Round Valley Drive from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. today. No appointments are necessary. The Park City School District said unvaccinated students who are exposed to measles will be required to stay home for 21 days. The district also asked families to submit up-to-date vaccination records. Measles symptoms include a high fever, cough, and red blotchy rash. Complications of the virus can be life-threatening. We'll be right back after this. For many of us, Thanksgiving is a time spent with families, enjoying abundant food and football, and hoping the Dallas Cowboys lose. But for the less fortunate in our community, the holidays can be a particular challenge. Here to talk about some of the many programs provided by the Christian Center of Park City to help families meet those challenges is Steve Richardson, CCPC Executive Director, and Rob Paul, a longtime volunteer at the center. Good morning, and thanks for joining me this morning, guys. Oh, wait a second. I don't have your mic up.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having us.
That works a little better. Morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Let's start by talking turkey. How many turkeys will the center distribute this holiday season?
So we've already distributed most of them, but we had 1,800 donated through the Realtors Association and through a lot of donors. And so we've been able to give those out since Friday of last week. It's been amazing.
You know, when I hear that number, I start thinking about the mechanics. Where do you store 1,800 frozen turkeys? How do you make that all happen?
Yes. So some of them we took straight to people's houses. Mm-hmm. So straight to some of the low-income housing areas, the mobile home parks in different towns around Summit County and Wasatch County. Some we took to our Wasatch County pantry that has a lot of freezers. And then we have freezers in our warehouse for this purpose. They're empty most of the year, but we have to have them for turkey time.
And how many of these are delivered versus how many do people come to the various distribution points to pick
them
up?
So the majority of them are brought at the distribution points. So people know the Friday before Thanksgiving is when they come to get their turkey. We had a ton of people show up last Friday, and we had turkeys just sitting there waiting for them, and it was a great, great day.
It sounds kind of like a festive thing. Like, I'm sure these people are very happy to get those turkeys, and you're happy to be able to provide them.
Absolutely. And this year was really special. We had a little gift bag or a little food bag along with the turkeys, and then as you mentioned, we also had gift cards. So we had a donor being able to help us buy almost 1,000 gift cards, and it'll be 1,000 with some of the ones we're going to buy right before Thanksgiving.
Steve, I happened to be walking into Walmart the other day, and I saw you trying to talk to the Walmart person, and she was like incredulous. You want to do what? You want to buy what? She didn't get it. I think she was looking. She thought you wanted a donation. It was really funny.
It was crazy. We actually never were able to buy gift cards from Walmart. But luckily, Smith's and Macy's and some of the others have stepped up and allowed us to buy gift cards from them.
Now, we're talking about the logistics. I want to ask you, Rob, how important, or both of you guys, how important are volunteers to that aspect of getting things done?
Like any large organization, the majority of the footwork is done by hundreds of people that volunteer their services. It's extremely valuable. When you're moving that many turkeys, there isn't enough employees in the organization to just be able to handle it. So there's a whole bunch of people that help out, not only with the turkeys, but so many of the functions of the Christian Center, both here in Park City and in Heber.
And what are the range of the things that you have, the volunteers, that you're able to do as a volunteer, Rob?
Oh, gosh, there's so many interesting things. One of the biggest areas where they continue to need some help is the food pantry itself. And they've got a very organized system for people to volunteer for certain time periods to be able to do things. To give you an example, they used to be open on Saturdays with the food pantry, but they have a shortage of volunteers and could use some more people volunteering for that. Then there's all types of special activities, whether it may be the coat drive or the turkey hauling or so many other different things. There's such an interesting spectrum of things to enjoy being a volunteer.
And, you know, I've done some volunteer work at the food pantry, and it's pretty rewarding to stock the shelves and then see the people being able to get access to food that they really need, which is the segue I wanted to get to, Steve, which is we're reading a lot or hearing a lot in the media about demand at food pantries skyrocketing. Are we seeing a demand increase here in Park City?
Very much so. Yeah, so it started obviously with the government shutdown. Before SNAP ended on November 1st, we saw already some federal employees coming in, so we saw an uptick in October, and then we saw a big increase in November. And even as soon as SNAP benefits stopped, we had all these people coming here in order to get jobs on the ski slopes. Mm-hmm. And if you look around, if you live in Park City in the area, you might have noticed not a whole lot of snow. And so people are needing help. They're here.
They're here.
They might have housing.
Paid.
They had a plan, but they don't have any hours. They don't have any way to get food or make money. And so we've helped a number of people, both in our basic needs assistance, just being able to pay gas bills or to pay for a tank of gas, as well as our food pantry.
Steve, I want to see if we can give our listeners a sense of how big an operation the food pantry is. Any kind of metrics, number of families, number of tons of food. Talk a little bit about how this works.
60,000 people walked through the door last year. Mm-hmm. 60,000. And that includes the food pantry here in Park City, the food pantry in Wasatch County and Heber City, and the mobile food pantries. So most people know we do at least one mobile food pantry two mobile food pantries every single week during the summer, where we take a big truck full of food, especially fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. People know about the Christian Center. We do canned goods. We love it when people donate canned goods, but our number one goal is to give healthy, fresh foods. So we bring those to low-income housing areas throughout Summit County and Wasatch County twice a week in the summer, just making sure people have something to eat.
Now, that 60,000 number, is that 60,000 individual people as opposed to 60,000 visits?
It's 60,000 visits. It could represent 60,000 families.
But it probably doesn't. But still, in a community a community of this size, that is an incredible number. Talk a little bit about where the food comes from.
So it comes from a few different places. Obviously, we have the National Honor Society about to do a huge food drive for us. We love the high school here in Park City, and the Wasatch High School is starting to do one as well, and it's amazing. So we get a lot of our canned goods through food drives. And then our fresh food, we get three different ways. So one is we have food rescue. We want to make sure no good food goes to waste. So if half of the grapes in some batch are bad, the place like Walmart or Smith's will donate the food to us. We have volunteers going through that, picking out the good grapes and setting them aside. It's down to a single grape we will pick out. We don't throw away the whole bag. We want to compost the rest of it, but we try to save any fresh food to make it go to good use. Then we have, especially over the last month, so many wonderful donors who are stopping by the Christian Center, bringing eggs, bringing milk, bringing vegetable, bringing things that we need and are so valuable, especially right now, diapers and baby formula.
Yeah.
And then the third way is that especially for fresh food as well as for the food mobile food pantry, it's the donations. So it's nice to bring in that fresh food or fresh vegetables or fresh milk, but nobody knows what we need.
Other kinds of greens are really happy.
Right.
Really
if somebody donates money, my team knows as soon as we're low on something just to go out and buy it.
Okay.
Go out and buy it.
And again, Rob, have you dealt at all with the mechanics of picking up that food at the various places? I'm visualizing something like a newspaper route. Like you've got trucks going to different places in the morning. Is that basically how it works?
Yes. It's quite a huge operation, and one thing we're thankful for is all of the major grocery stores in both Heber and in Park City donate this food for food rescue. Some of it is just expiring, but some of it, and much of it, quite often is, we've got excess. This is going to expire in 3 days. Let's give it to the Christian Center now because we got all this other food coming in. It's also a great way to look at it is it's recycling. Rather than getting thrown away, it's getting eaten and consumed. The United States is a huge food producer, but we're one of the worst for food being thrown away. And this is a way to put it to something very, very positive. Again, it's a very big logistics operation. Some of the volunteers are up at, 6 o'clock in the morning to drive the trucks to the grocery stores, pick up these huge crates of food, put them in the van, bring them to both Heber and to Park City, unload them, and then there's another whole contingent already in the pantry, putting it in their place and doing all the distribution.
And I can't help but give you an opportunity to do a public service announcement and let people who are listening to this and are inspired at this time of year to want to give back in a different way. How can people find out about volunteer opportunities at the center?
So the best way is CCOFPC, so Christian Center of Park City. And we have the website, and they can go on and just sign up on the website. There's a little video we want you to watch to make sure you know what to do, and a little questionnaire to make sure that you're willing to help. You don't have to volunteer every single day or every single week or every single month. Maybe it's a one time, maybe it's two or three times a year. We'd love to get any volunteers we can.
Now, you touched on the Basic Needs Assistance Program. Can you share with the audience a little bit about what that is? And most importantly, how are people qualified to be able to obtain that kind of help?
So everything we do is about dignity and respect. We know the number one issue within poverty is shame. People feeling ashamed to get help, ashamed to say that they need help. And so our Basic Needs Assistance Program is there if somebody, especially for homeless, for people who are transient and get stuck here, for people that can't pay maybe an electricity bill or a water bill, and they'll come in and we'll work with them, try to figure out how we can help them to not face this in the future. If we can help them through some financial support, financial aid, financial training, working with other nonprofits, we have had our most number of basic needs customers over the last month that we've had in 25 years of our history of the Christian Center. And we're just trying to figure out how do we give people that step up. Even somebody who just needs a coat. It used to be that we'd take people into the coat and just give them a coat, but that feels like charity. Now they get a gift card. And they can go shop in the store on their own. If they want help, they will. Yesterday, one customer wanted help. And so Heather, one of our basic needs assistance navigators, she took him in there and showed her exactly how to buy the coat. But we'd want to give them that dignity to be able to shop themselves.
And before we go, I just want to touch on counseling, because I know that's another sort of major program that you guys offer.
Absolutely. So we do have counseling. It's a beautiful counseling center. If you've never been to it, beautiful couches, floor-to-ceiling windows, licensed therapists, and some that are getting trained. But top-notch counseling, and we take donations for scholarships. And so right now, scholarships are based on how much the person makes, and if somebody doesn't make very much at all, the cheapest we offer is $4 sessions. And so we want them to feel like, okay, I'm doing something, I'm putting something into this, but as little as $4, and most of our scholarships right now are subsidizing the rest of the care for four, so that we can do $4 sessions.
Okay, anything else we want to touch on before
Operation
we
Hope.
Talk about
Operation
Hope.
So we got Operation Hope coming in 2 weeks. We have boxes all over the place asking for new toys. If you haven't been in Park City around Christmas, you've got to go to the Santa Pub Crawl that supports Operation Hope. A lot of the boxes around town, and Operation Hope is one of the reasons a year ago that I wanted so badly to come to the Christian Center, because I had been in these places where you write down three things that you want, that the kid wants, and the parents have to just give this card of the three toys the kid wants and hope somebody buys it for him, and it may not be what the kid actually wants. And then the parents also feel like I'm just kind of not really being a parent. Here, we get all these donations of toys. We have thousands and thousands, probably 8,000 toys we're going to set up in a toy store, and then every parent gets the dignity of shopping in this toy store for free. They're going to come to the toy store. They're going to get a volunteer. So volunteers are still taking volunteer to help them to shop. And then they get to shop for their kids, but not cost them a dime.
And again, when will that shopping extravaganza happen?
So that's the 8th and 9th of December.
And if people want to volunteer to be one of Santa's elves and help out with that,
Christian Center Park City website.
Okay.
Just get on there. It's all there.
Okay. Again, guys, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Roger.
Have a
we
great
appreciate
Thanksgiving.
It.
Bye-bye, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
The holidays mean fun, family presents, and trash. Here to talk about how we as a community manage all that holiday trash and some new developments with respect to recycling, we have Ashley Cawley of Republic Services. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Ashley, let me ask you a couple questions. Let's get started. How much of an additional load do the holidays place on Republic Services? Is it a big spike?
I would say so, yes, especially out here in a community like this where we have a lot of people traveling here for the holidays and for the weather, et cetera. So, yes, it does impact us a little bit.
So, you know, you read stories about how UPS hires an army of extra people and how different organizations sort of prepare for and cope with the extra load. What are some of the things that you guys do to get ready for this?
Okay, so we definitely like to overhire during this time of the year. It really, I will say, more of the challenge for us is the weather itself and the winter conditions. You wouldn't think about it, but just having some snow in your cart, in your container that maybe ices over or maybe melts, that puts in additional weight for us. So it affects safety. We can talk about that later. But that's what we plan for. So we bring people in, we try to hire people. But yeah, it's more weather we're thinking about right now.
And that's interesting because, a few years ago we had a major, a remarkably wonderful winter for our skiers.
Yes, yes.
But presented some unique challenges both to our road crews and to you guys.
Yes.
And the public. What do you want the public to know about how they can help manage this weather problem?
Yes. So we're going to all keep our fingers crossed that we get good snow, right? But we also have to be prepared for some of the complications that come with that. So I would say, first and foremost, we want the public to know that as a company, we care the most about safety. Safety for you, safety for everyone on the road. So there are a few things that we can do together to help protect all of us. I think the first one is obviously, keep in mind, if there is snow that's compacted, it's on the side of the road, it's built up, etc., it might prevent you from seeing a truck that's near you. Or it might prevent that truck driver from seeing you. So a lot of us don't think about it, but when we're going to get into our car or we're going out just to look at the road, we don't think about, oh, maybe there's a huge garbage truck right there that's going to slam down our cart, right? So that is one thing first and foremost. I think just be mindful if there's snow, there might be a garbage truck out there, so be careful. I think secondly, there's just so much. The first one is make sure you keep your cart lid closed as best as you can. Yes, I talked about how snow can get in there, melt, freeze over. It can make it dangerous to service. But then there's more. Just so if we're dealing with a lot of winter complications, I always like to remind people that you can sign up for service notifications. That means that if your neighborhood is going to have to be delayed because we cannot safely get to you, you can sign up for that service to get a call or a text message. Most people that experienced that storm a few years ago already opted to sign in. But if you haven't yet, you can email us at summitcounty@republicservices.com, and that will help you get those notifications. All you need to do is include your address, say your phone number, how you would like to be contacted, and that can help prepare you for if, unfortunately, there is a big winter service storm, then you can get that notification that you'll be affected.
And when there's a big storm, obviously, sometimes you have to delay things a day. Is that, what kinds of things, any good organization learns lessons.
Yes.
And is there anything you can share that you guys might have learned as a result of what happened a couple of years ago?
Yes. So I will say that as a company, typically here, our plan, in which it still is if there is really bad winter snow conditions and we can't safely access some neighborhoods, the plan is you put your cart out in the morning. We service from 7 to 7, a.m. to p.m. And if we cannot get back to you, bring your cart back inside, then put it out the next morning and we'll return. But a lesson we did learn a few years ago is sometimes it keeps snowing.
Yeah.
And in that case, that's where we have that notification set up to help the customer know, as well as we will come back if you put it out the next day and we still cannot get to you and you get that notification, then we will be coming back the next week. So we're all going to have our fingers crossed it doesn't snow every day, but...
Is there anything that customers need that you want customers to think about in terms of positioning the can on days that there's a snow issue?
Yes. So I will say, I strongly stress do not leave your cart overnight outside. Because it can freeze, it can get stuck to the snow, it can get buried under the snow, and we won't even see it. Also, as Republic Services, unfortunately, we are not a snowplow company. And we're not paid to do that, and we're not very good at it. So,
and the trucks don't have plows on the front.
No, they don't. They don't. So I like to remind people, if you don't think you can move it, then we certainly can't move it.
Okay.
So I would say get it out there in the morning, not the night before, and put it somewhere, obviously in the curb, but not in the snow, right?
And that's an interesting tip, because most of us are used to putting our cans out the night before so we don't have to think about it. I think what you're telling us is... If Cedric the weatherman is telling us it's going to snow tonight, think twice.
Yes.
And do it in the morning. You don't come till 7 at the earliest.
Yes.
And I think people have a sense of when the trash man usually does come.
That's a good point, though. That is a great point, because during this time of the year, if it's snowing or there's a storm, We follow the snowplows, so we coordinate with them. So you may So you may be used to getting your garbage or recycling picked up at 10 a.m. and that day we're going to come at 3 because you got the snowplow came later that day, or maybe you'll be coming earlier. So I say get it out by 7, have it out at 7, and then we will come by before 7 o'clock at night.
Anything else we want to touch on with, in terms of this topic that is dealing in the winter and regular snow? Oh, I do want to talk about one more.
Yeah.
The peaks that we get associated with holiday trash. And can you talk a little bit about those challenges that, that are presented to you, and again, what you want the public to do?
What the public, okay, so what the public should know is that we really need your cans to be not overfilled with the lid closed. I talked a little bit about it filling up, right? Unfortunately, during this time of the year, the holidays, we have a lot of people come into the community to celebrate, and things get overloaded. Then it can get dangerous because snow gets in, we dump it, it could fall, etc. It does affect our volumes, but again, it's more about safety for us right now. So we want to make sure those lids are closed, do the best we can. If you've got a little bit of extra recycling, a good tip for that is to break down your boxes. It makes a world of a difference in fitting that into your cart.
Okay, and again, when people leave that can, they overfill it and the lid's up a little bit. That's a problem?
Yes, it can be a big problem. If it causes snow to get in, anything like that, yes, it can be impact us a lot.
Okay. Actually, I want to talk about recycling a little bit.
Okay.
Because you mentioned that, obviously, one of the things that is, you know, an important service in this community is that there is curbside recycling. My understanding is, well, I do have a question for you. We get direction as to what should be put in a recycling can. And one of the things that we're not supposed to do is put it in bags. What happens if people do it anyway? They go to the store, they see something that says recycling bag and think, oh, I can use that.
Yeah.
They can't, can they?
No, not right now.
What happens?
So right now your recycling is going to a very high-tech center in Salt Lake City that is a big, massive recycling facility where they have hand sorters and they also have machines. It goes down a streamline, all this mixed recycling. What can happen there is that these bags can get caught. Maybe a hand sorter misses it and it jams the equipment. So it can potentially shut down the facility for hours, maybe even a day. So it's something we're already always trying to conquer and tell people, hey, take those plastic bags to most grocery stores, accept them. But right now it prevents that challenge, and then it prevents the recycling facility from doing business as usual and getting those recyclable materials ready to be sold out.
And again, what happens if I put a greasy pizza box into my recycling? Because we're not supposed to do that.
Not right now.
So what happens?
Yes. So it really depends here. So I will say that this is kind of up and coming. There's more knowledge coming out about greasy pizza boxes. Right now I'm still saying no because it can contaminate the load. And it really depends, right? Mm-hmm. If you're someone that maybe is contracted with a composter who does it separately, maybe you can work on that. But for right now, anything, any material that has food or liquid on it, it can potentially contaminate your stream. And then it prevents a lot of items from being able to be recycled. And we're trying to, you know, make that circular economy work. So for right now, we're still saying greasy pizza boxes, let's leave them out of the recycling.
And for people in the community who I've heard people express cynicism to me as to whether this stuff is really recycled, it's really recycled, isn't
it? Okay. Yes.
Do you guys happen to have, this is an offbeat question, do you happen to have any, like, videos of the recycling facility if people want to get reassurance?
Yes. And no, that's a great idea. Thank you for the recommendation. Yes, we do have videos for that, and it is strictly, I want to just emphasize this completely, it is completely against the law for us or any public service provider to take recyclable materials to a landfill unless it has been so contaminated that it can't be recycled. So that should never, ever, ever be happening. Recycling does work, but again, I'm here to encourage that and encourage the other things, which is reduce, reuse, then recycle.
Okay. I understand that Summit County is looking to increase sort of remote recycling collection. And can you, is that a part of your contract, these new remote centers?
It really depends. Okay. So if we're talking about Recycle Utah, they might be moving around. the county is definitely invested in putting some potential different roll-offs or containers around the community for individuals to go drop that off when Recycle Utah moves. Mm-hmm. So that's something we definitely partner with them on, and we'll be happy to provide that service in the future.
Okay, can you explain a little bit about what we're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. So that has been, Recycle Utah has been located here kind of centrally in Park City. They are going to be moving locations because they're getting so big, and that's wonderful for them. But the community and Summit County itself recognizes that it's good to have some drop-off locations. So we are working with them. They have requested that when Recycle Utah moves, we will be putting some large roll-off boxes that will accept types of recyclable materials, and it will be an open service for members of the community.
And one of the things I know people ask about a lot is glass.
Yes.
Will there be recycling roll-offs for glass? Are we anticipating that at some point?
So right now, I know that we're contracted to do mixed recycling, that glass
non-glass.
Is not in it.
Okay.
But the referral company we have is Momentum. Now, that might change in the future. Maybe we'll be accepting that. We certainly have that capability. But we do the mix that doesn't have glass, and then Momentum is another organization that can contract with you for glass pickup.
Okay. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
I just want to say thank you so much for having me. We really want to, again, stress safety during this winter season. We love working with this community, and we're very impressed by how committed Summit County residents are to recycling.
Okay, Ashley, thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you. Have a great one.
While a criminal case against Greg DeBoer proceeds in Wasatch County, a related civil case is slowly moving forward in Summit County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has updates about the man involved in the deadly shooting.
63-year-old Summit County resident Greg Kyle DeBoer admitted to fatally shooting Patrick Hayes, who was 61, in a road rage incident near Jordanelle State Park in September 2024. Wasatch County prosecutors charged him with obstruction of justice for allegedly burying the gun, but not with the shooting itself. In a lawsuit filed in February in Third District Court, Hayes' son, Christian Hayes, alleged DeBoer wrongfully killed Patrick Hayes, knowingly broke the law, and caused the family pain and suffering. The lawsuit also contended DeBoer committed fraud by transferring the deed to his Browns Canyon home to his girlfriend. On Tuesday, Third District Judge Richard Mrozek heard from attorneys about two proposed motions. One motion to pause civil case proceedings until the criminal obstruction case is resolved, and another motion to dismiss the fraud allegation. Mrozek proposed granting a stay on the civil case for about 3 months until late February 2026. In the meantime, there's a court hearing in January for the obstruction case.
You can just pick up the phone and talk to each other during the week before February 27. Make sure you've met and conferred, and then come tell me what you want to do on the 27th.
At the review hearing February 27th, the judge will decide whether to extend the stay or reduce it in some way. Tuesday morning, Mrozek also considered the alleged fraud cause of action. The lawsuit said the transfers were done with the intent to hinder, delay, or defraud Mr. DeBoer's creditors, including the Hayes family. According to county records, the home was jointly held by DeBoer and his partner until January 6, 2025, when his girlfriend became the only deed holder. About 2 months later, on March 20th, shortly after the wrongful death lawsuit was filed, DeBoer's name was added back to the deed. Mrozek said, since the transfer was reversed to the same way it was before Hayes' death, it's beyond the scope of the courts.
A cause of action becomes moot when the controversy is eliminated, thereby rendering the relief requested impossible of or no legal effect.
The fraudulent transfer cause of action was dismissed. The lawsuit argues Christian Hayes and his family suffered over $20 million in emotional pain, lost wages, and expenses due to the death. Meanwhile, in 4th District Court, DeBoer pleaded not guilty to felony obstruction of justice at his arraignment November 5th. A pretrial hearing is scheduled for January 21st. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, news reports of people getting burned while frying a turkey are almost as much a part of Thanksgiving as watching the Macy's Day Parade. Joining us to talk about safety and holiday cooking and other health risks is Jeremiah LaFranca of the American Red Cross. Good morning, Jeremiah, and thanks for being here.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's talk about silly cooking injuries. I mean, and they're not silly. They're scary. What are some common injuries you see associated with holiday cooking?
Yeah, so we see a lot of burns happen, right? I mean, over Thanksgiving holiday, we see about a 400% increase in home fires due to cooking fires. Some silly things that we see are people trying to deep fry a turkey in a garage. You know, they suddenly put in a frozen turkey, the flames start to kick up, they're too close. We see fire injuries on the arms, can lead on the face too. So we just want to make sure people are doing that properly and we want to provide those tips.
Let's take a side detour. The frying of a turkey, I think this was big a few years ago, but nonetheless, I walked into Home Depot the other day, and on my left, there were these giant stack of peanut oil, which is not something you usually see at the entry to Home Depot, which suggests that frying turkeys are alive and well. This is a dangerous thing. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things that go wrong and why.
Yeah, the most common thing that we see is that people forget to thaw their turkey, right? So Thanksgiving rolls around, they want to get it in the deep fryer, and they think, okay, I can make this work. They put it in hot oil, and all of a sudden, you have these flames that go up a good 5-6 feet. The problem with that is, you know, if they don't have the deep fryer away from the house, that's going to kick up against the siding of the house. It'll melt the siding. It can cause the house to catch on fire. They do it on a wooden deck, or they'll do it in their garage, and it's not taking the proper safety precautions on that.
The last time I tried to fry a turkey, my wife made me fry it 50 feet from the house. It was like way out of the driveway, but
smart.
It probably was the right thing to do. Yeah. Okay, so I want to say that's almost low hanging fruit, but you see a lot of other injuries associated with holiday cooking.
We do. So one of the most common things that we see is when you have a house full of people are just by the stovetops, they're cooking, they have kids that come a little too close, you know, you have pot handles hanging off, things of that nature, people aren't paying attention. So if you're not keeping kids and pets far enough away, people tend to trip up, we have people getting burned by those pot handles, and we see a lot of injuries going into hospitals with that.
What about, for lack of a better term, dumb chopping incidents?
Yeah. You know, again, it's just all about paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, the most common thing we see on Thanksgiving, and that's where we see the most common injuries, is people just losing track of what they're doing. They have, like I said, a house full of people, you know, and they're just not paying attention to either cutting or cooking, and that's when the accidents occur.
Okay, so we talked about chopping, we talked about fires. What else? What else do you see?
Yeah, so one of the most common things we see, too, is people just kind of disconnecting their smoke alarms. You know, the beeping's going off, they hear, you know, the smoke is going on, and, you know, they just get annoyed by it, so they turn off their smoke alarms, they walk away from the stove, all of a sudden you have a fire that starts, and they can't put it out because it's a grease fire, right? You can't get to the lid in time. They try to put water on that fire, and all of a sudden, you know, that flares it up even more if it's a grease fire. So that's when the fire department starts rolling in. And so it's just, again, using that common sense. If you're cooking with grease, understand that if you get a fire, don't put it out with water.
What do you put it out with?
Yeah, you put it out, you get a lid or a cookie sheet if you're in the house and try to smother it. Okay. Put that on top, or if you have like a class ABC or a class K fire extinguisher, you're able to put it out that way. Just make sure you're using the right fire extinguisher.
Well, let's take a brief detour because, you know, not all of us, under the sink, some of us will have a fire extinguisher they probably haven't looked at in 10 years, don't know what it is, don't know what class is. Let's do a little bit of a detour. You mentioned A, B, C, and K?
Correct.
What are those?
Yeah, so if you go to like your Lowe's or Home Depot and you're looking at your fire extinguishers, they'll have that identification on there. Mm-hmm. And essentially they're graded for different types of fires. So if you use not a K or an ABC, if you use a different type of fire extinguisher, can actually spread the grease fire just because it doesn't interact well. The chemicals don't balance.
So while a lot of people are very aware of and change their smoke detectors when the time changes, how often should I change my fire extinguisher, and what fire extinguisher should be under my kitchen sink?
Yeah, so we recommend class A, B, C, or K, right? You know, just because you can deal with those
grease fires. Any of those four will work
ABC,
on a grease fire?
Yeah, or K. So that's okay. The two different types there. And I would also recommend that you're checking your smoke alarms every month. You know, and with your fire extinguishers, you should be checking those dates. I would check it every year.
How long does a fire extinguisher last? I mean, is there an expiration date on there when I buy it?
Yeah. There'll be an expiration date on there. It usually lasts quite a long time, but you want to check that and make sure on a regular basis. Just like your smoke alarms, just check it every year, at least for the fire extinguisher. For your smoke alarms, check them every month.
Okay. Anything else you want to touch on in terms of cooking injuries? Because I got other injuries to talk about.
Yeah. No, you know, with the smoke alarms, the one thing I would say is just, again, people aren't checking those enough, right? You go through that, you think they're installed, you built your home like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they think, okay, I changed the batteries, I'm good. Those components wear out. And so if you don't change those every 10 years, you should check your manufacturer's date, make sure that's good, because that's where you get those accidents.
There is a date on the back of that smoke detector.
Correct.
Now, some of the newer models, I think, will like tell you when they expire. They bark at you, don't they?
Yeah. They'll give you notice. Again, you'll look at those dates. You'll make sure that they're the components. Because, again, even if you're getting the batteries in and you're testing it and it's working after 10 years, you should still be changing it out if that's the manufacturer's recommendation.
So I looked at the Red Cross website last night to look at what some of their holiday tips, and there were some other sort of interesting things that I hadn't thought about. One of which is that Injuries associated with bad ladder placement is a significant holiday issue. Can you talk a little bit about what they're talking about?
Yeah, so we see people, you know, lean up their ladders against a house and suddenly, you know, it's up against a gutter. Maybe it's a little cold. Maybe it's slippery because there's snow on the roof and that ladder slides off when people are going up it. So people just not paying attention to the instructions on the ladder, thinking that they're going to be okay. So it's one of the common things that we see, and we just encourage people to be aware of that and be cautious.
It does give you images of Clark Griswold, right?
Yeah,
climbing up that ladder and having the ladder slide.
Movie,
yeah, exactly. Speaking of other like injuries, lifting injuries, I read, were a significant factor at the holidays. What is that about?
Yeah, so I mean, again,
is this just common sense?
Just common sense, you know. Just be aware of your limitations, personally, you know, when we get around the holidays and we're trying to get things done, people just kind of are moving fast and they're not paying attention to those kind of things. And we just want to make sure they're careful with that.
We talked about fire risk from cooking. That's not the only sort of fire danger that pops up in the holidays, is it?
Correct. I mean, Christmas lights, things of that nature where people aren't paying attention, making sure that they're installed correctly, make sure that you have the right electrical outlets that you're using for your Christmas lights outside, that those are in good working order. That's something else that we see flare up, where we see those electrical shorts and suddenly, again, you got a fire on the side of the house and that can go up quickly into the roof.
And again, so the key there is understanding what, and again, as you know, newer Christmas lights tend to draw less power than the older ones did. The old incandescents drew a lot of juice.
Yeah.
But again, you need to look at what the demand is on that outlet and see if you're within specs.
I mean, again, when you string up your own lights and people are trying to overload it with, you know, string after string after string, they lose and they don't pay attention to that. That's where that short comes in, and that's where we get the issues.
What about candles? Do we see a lot of fires as a result of, people like, I'm going to light these pretty candles. I mean, people used to light candles on Christmas trees, which, like, to me was crazy, But even now, I mean, do we see candle dangers?
We do see that, you know, especially over the holidays, you get those Christmas candles that people want to light, or they have the potpourri that they want to do in the stovetop and they don't pay attention, they lose track, that dries out, and suddenly you've got some burned things going on in the pot. With candles especially, people just leaving those on. If you're leaving the room, you know, blow out the candle. Just use common sense in that regard so that way you don't run into an accident.
Okay. Any safety tips? A lot of travel going on. Any safety tips that you have for people associating with travel at the holidays?
Yeah, especially over the holidays when you start getting weather, make sure that you have a 72-hour kit or something that will keep you safe if you do get stuck in weather. Common things that we see are people without blankets, water, maybe some snacks in there, making sure that you have a first aid kit if you do get in an accident and you're in kind of an isolated spot. If you're going to go and do some cross-country skiing, things of that nature, we see people kind of get stuck out there. They're not properly prepared, and suddenly they're kind of stuck in a horrible situation. So, again, just keep your car prepared with a 72-hour kit of some sort so that way you're ready to go.
Okay, Jeremiah, anything else we want to touch on before you go?
Yeah, I think, you know, just we have Giving Tuesday coming up. Just ask that you keep us in mind, you know, as you go and look at your list of charities. We do what we do based on giving of people and what they can provide. So nonprofits depend on that. So whether it's Red Cross or another nonprofit, we ask that you consider giving back this holiday season.
And if people want to learn more about the Red Cross, and in particular if they are interested in including you in their stocking for a Christmas-related donation, how can they find out more?
Yeah, you can go to redcross.org, or you can download one of our Red Cross apps to learn more about that.
All right, Jeremiah, thanks for joining us. Have a great Thanksgiving, and don't burn the turkey.
Right.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
While millions of Americans are expected to travel for Thanksgiving, KPCW's Sydney Weaver reports, Salt Lake City International Airport says it's prepared for the rush of about 120,000 passengers through the airport this weekend.
The Salt Lake City International Airport's busiest times are the fall and winter holidays during ski season. The airport's communications director, Nancy Vollmer, says it is expecting about 60,000 travelers in and out of Salt Lake Wednesday, with the same number expected after the holiday.
The busiest day after Thanksgiving will be that Sunday. And again, we'll expect about 30,000 passengers to go through screening on those days and the same number of passengers to arrive.
Vollmer says passengers won't need to worry about lingering travel impacts in the wake of the longest government shutdown in U.S. history.
We did have some flights that were canceled, as you well know, during that federal government shutdown. But once that was lifted, all of the flights were reinstated. We have a full staff with TSA. So, no, we really are not seeing any impacts from that federal shutdown.
As people pack for their trips, Vollmer encourages travelers to check the latest luggage restrictions and requirements to avoid security issues.
Look at what you're taking in your carry-on bag. Look on the TSA.gov website to make sure you're not bringing anything that's not allowed, because if there are any delays at the security checkpoint, that impacts all the passengers.
She advises travelers to arrive 2 hours prior to boarding for domestic flights and 3 hours for international flights. Vollmer also reminds everyone 18 and older they must now have a real ID or another acceptable form of identification, like a passport, to get through security. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
Well, No Name Saloon is celebrating its 25th year on Main Street with its annual community Thanksgiving dinner. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details on this year's Freebird Feast.
No Name Saloon Marketing Director Matt Sullivan says the Main Street mainstay has organized a Thanksgiving dinner for the community every year since Jesse Shetler bought the joint 25 years ago.
Especially back then, that were part-time locals, people that were transient working in the resorts and ski bums and stuff. And it was a place for everybody to come together as a family and have Thanksgiving dinner.
The bar celebrated its Silver Jubilee in August and is once again opening its doors November 27th at 2 p.m. for a free dinner dubbed Freebird. Sullivan says there will be turkey and all the usual side dishes. Customers pay for their own drinks. No Name Saloon is 21 and older. There will be an identical buffet next door at Annex Burger for those under 21. Sullivan expects about 350 people and says No Name will serve Thanksgiving dinner until the food runs out. Done to Your Taste will cater the dinner and is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Park City has finished cleaning up contaminated soil at the Gordo property near Round Valley. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the city now wants local input on the environmental plan to avoid further exposure.
The Gordo property includes about 22 acres along State Route 248, west of the intersection with Richardson Flat Road. Park City finished removing contaminated soil from the Gordo property earlier this year, a process that involved moving over 60,000 tons of material to landfills in Summit and Utah counties. Soil there previously contained chemicals like lead and arsenic, a byproduct of Park City's mining history. As part of the environmental cleanup process, Utah's Department of Environmental Quality requires Park City to implement a site management plan to prevent any future exposure to the contaminants. The city is now asking residents for input on the draft plan. It includes steps like installing a cover on the land and notifying workers about the presence of heavy metals. The land can be developed, but it can't be used for crops or fruit trees. Construction or excavation will require special precautions. Residents can comment on the plan until 5 p.m. December 10th. Details about where to send comments are available at kpcw.org. Environmental remediation was required for the Gordo land before any development could be approved. Park City leaders have considered a range of ideas for the property, from building an 800-space parking lot to developing a mixed-use village. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Utah Transit Authority's winter service starts this week, including the launch of the ski bus service. The UTA ski bus will shuttle skiers and riders to resorts up Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons starting Thanksgiving Day, November 27th, as the ski areas start to open for the season. The separate canyon service up Little Cottonwood Canyon begins December 7th, running daily from 6 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. UTA bus service to Snow Basin in Huntsville begins November 28th. UTA ski bus will also take riders to Powder Mountain from Ogden's 21st Street starting December 13th and to Sundance Resort from University Place in Provo beginning December 20th. A full list of ski resort opening days, if they ever get to open given our challenges from the weather, is available at kpcw.org. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. I'm Roger Goldman. I'm wishing you a fantastic holiday.